You have to guess what we're going to do right now. Wow, already Pundarik knows. Wait, we won't have you speak your revelation until everything is quiet.
Do
we have
a quiz?
No. Your anxiety is not based on anything. Anyone else can guess? Pragna?
Just a device to call our attention.
What's a device? What I just used? Yeah, well, that obviously. But I also want to see if anyone can guess what we're going to do now.
Going to have the group presentation that we missed last time?
Getting closer, but it's not right.
You're going to explain what sets are again. You're doing it.
Right? I'm doing it, so I don't have to explain it. Okay. Boy, I'm stumping everyone.
Presentations?
What?
Presentations.
Yes, we're going to have presentations. Very good. Where did you learn this mystic mind-reading ability? Or did you just watch what we did first last time? I think that's what we've been doing first for a while. Now, what we're going to do, we'll divide the class up into three parts. One is we'll have some individual presentations. Now, who remembers we'll continue our mind reading game. Now, what am I going to ask the people after, one by one, as they make a presentation? And after this, I'll tell you one of the most important hints and techniques of teaching that there can be. Okay, one thing. What was your explicit instructional objective? I'm going to ask everyone, what's your explicit instructional objective. What else? What else am I going to ask?
At the end of this class, my students will have done.
Wait a second. That's not a question. What else am I going to ask? I'll ask something about set.
Evaluation.
Closure. Evaluation, because you were all supposed to have incorporated that. And also a nice question to ask is how well you asked the one who made the presentation, how well they think the presentation went. And secondarily, come in. You're welcome. We have chairs. We have floors. There's one right in the corner. Feeling better?
Yeah.
How well do you think your presentation went? Are there any... Sometimes we try something. We try a technique when we make a presentation. Oops. And we're not quite sure how well it worked. We'll try a set. We'll just try to keep people's interest in a particular way. And we're not sure how well it worked. So it's often good it's an opportunity for the one who makes the presentation to be asked this question. Would you like to ask any questions of the audience, of the students? And then he could ask, well, what do you think about this part? How did that part work? And how did that part work? So any questions for the students? Okay, so these are the type of questions we're going to ask. What was your explicit instructional objective? What was your set, although it was maybe obvious? Closure, did you use set? Did you use closure? Did you use evaluation? Do you think these things worked? Do you want any... you want to ask any questions of the audience or the students? Okay, these are the type of questions. Now for the next question, who's going to go first? Anyone ready? Not a group, but an individual. Okay, let's see if this... Is there anyone who hasn't gone yet who'd like to go? Who hasn't done an individual presentation who'd like to go? Okay, Narottam, you raised your hand. I still remember Narottam took this course last year, and last year he taught us how to get inexpensive plane tickets, and all the tricks in getting inexpensive plane tickets. Maybe you'd like to make that presentation again. Everyone would like to hear. You were raising your hand, weren't you, for a real presentation?
No, I wasn't.
I thought you were. He was pointing to someone else. As I said last time, you always have to be watched out for the big boys who sit in the back row. They tend to cause a little trouble. Okay. Anyone like to make a presentation? Okay, Rupa. Someone who hasn't gone yet.
So today, hopefully, almost everyone will make their presentation.
Is that going to be 2 minutes?
2 minutes. And I'll go like this, because usually it's hard to, no one ever looks at me, so I'll just...
Okay.
And 1.5. Something for all.
So Hare Krishna, yes. I would like those who know the 10 offenses against the Holy Dhamma, please raise their hands. Those who know by heart. 1, 2. Well, I don't know it myself, but we start from this point, because we are in the Holy Dhamma, and it's very important to know these offenses. So we're gonna go together, take the trouble to go through these offenses. And today we start with doing the first offenses. So the first offense is, please listen carefully, because it's very important. The first offense is to have disrespect to the Guru. Who is the revealer of the Holy Dhamma? So this is a very important point. It's actually the most important. Because the Guru is like the key to allow us entrance into the Holy Dhamma. And the Holy Dhamma is being glorified in so many ways, in so many scriptures. I just have a quote from the Nectar of Devotion. Prabhupada says, after attainment of the Brahma Buddha stage, one can further advance to engagement in devotional service. So this attainment of transcendental love in devotional service to the Lord is the goal of life. And it can be achieved very easily for one who lives in Mathura Mandala, even for a few seconds. So that's the glories of the Holy Dhamma. One who lives here even for a few seconds, he can achieve the Holy Dhamma. So that's also in Upadeshamrita, they give us an hint how to attain that. It says that one who... I can't believe it.
It's already over.
What about your night?
Oh. I have not completed it. I had another 2 minutes to go. Sorry. I thought it was really important.
On the high seat.
Now what? What was your objective?
Well, my objective was to learn one offense a day.
One offense.
Yeah.
So you want, at the end of this lesson, the students will be able to do the following.
Yeah, I would have just wiped that off, and at the end I would have asked those who can recite it by heart to raise their hands.
You want them to know this first offense by heart. Okay, be able to say it out loud.
Yeah.
Because no is implicit. Okay.
Just 2 minutes to
say. You can...
Don't look.
Okay, why don't you have an evaluation right now? This is all part of his lesson. I'm also
right. So I just go to the end. So for this class, we learned so many things about the first offense to be avoided. Please, those who can recite it by heart, raise your hand, please. Very good. So those who don't, they will have to get ready for tomorrow. And tomorrow we're going to go to the second offense, that is to consider the Holy Dhamma temporary. Thank you very much.
Okay, what did you think of your when your set was obvious, but what, why don't you say what it was?
The importance of living in the Holy Dhamma in the proper way.
And also you asked, you said, how many of you know the 10 offenses by heart?
Yeah, hardly anyone. Only two.
Against the Dhamma. How many of you felt that your attention was attracted by that? But be straightforward and honest. We can take it.
No favoritism.
Okay. And your closure?
I think, because there was a little intermediate mix, I guess it was quite straightforward as well.
Okay, an evaluation. You already said you asked everyone. Of course, you don't really know, because you asked them if they knew it to raise the hand, but you didn't ask anyone to recite it or anything.
That's, it was a question of time.
But always, if you do something like that, you can do that, and then you can call on one or two people and that can help you.
Well, I'm sorry, just...
That's all right. Just sit down still. We haven't finished with you yet. Now, was there anything that you thought you could have improved?
Yeah, the planning.
The timing.
The timing, yeah, definitely.
And is there any response you would like from them on how something worked, or you think you have a pretty good idea?
Yeah, any suggestion, any criticism, please?
I thought actually your closure was very good, maybe it was accidental. A lot of the elements discussed you had in there that you referred to the next class, you summed it up.
It was, I had it planned.
And it seemed that in the middle you quote from Nectar Devotion, I didn't quite see how that was necessary for this lesson. Maybe I just didn't follow, I don't know.
Can I just answer that? Because I was just starting to quote from Upadeshamrita when he say that, you know, the same way you can, even if you bait once in the Radha Kunda, you attain love of God. But just two lines before he say that the Holy Dhamma or Radha Kunda is very rarely achieved even by great devotees. So we shouldn't think that, you know, we are here in Vrindavan, we already achieved Vrindavan, but only through the Guru, through the spiritual master, we can actually have access to it. Does it make sense? I couldn't, you know.
Okay. I'd rather not have too many comments. I don't know. I'd like to keep this point. Thank you very much. Anyone like to go next to Asmita? Yeah. Was that, did it disturb when I went like this? Did you hear it the first time?
I heard, but I couldn't figure out whether it was a minute.
Oh, well, this will be a minute and 30 seconds, and then that means. Okay.
Japa. One of the most important aspects in our devotional service. Here's a question for all of you. How many of you are not satisfied with the quality of your japa? Can you raise your hands? Good. I can continue with the presentation then. By the end of this class, I want all the devotees in this room to recall from memory the three types of bad japa I'm just about to demonstrate. Now, in order to facilitate the demonstration, I'll give some practical thought on it. The first type of bad japa, which we may indulge in, is called jibba japa. I'll give you a demonstration of it. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Kaboom. Where did you get that 30 from? Hare Ram, Hare Ram. What time is Prashadam anyway? Hare Ram, Hare Ram. Have you done that homework from Burijan? It's so difficult. I can never understand it. Hare Ram, Hare Ram. Okay. Number one, jibba japa. Two, nosedive japa. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Ram. Two, nose down jaka. Number three, radar jaka. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Three, radar japa. Now, to summarize, firstly, we had, secondly, thirdly,
my toes. Okay, thank you. Now, what was your objective you stated in the beginning?
To memorize and recall the three types of bad japa you may indulge in.
Why don't you just ask one by one and see how it is?
Can we have a show of hands for those that remember one of them?
The first one.
First one?
Jibba japa.
Jibba japa. Second one?
Nosedive.
The third one? Radha japa.
So there's some indication to the evaluation of how successful you were. And your set?
It was just in devotional service, japa is an important aspect, so I thought I'd mention that.
Now, I had a question about the set. Now, when you pulled out your beads, you did, everyone started laughing, right? Now, you didn't particularly do anything to get everyone laughing, very specific. First you got everyone very quiet, actually, by your presence. Then everyone started laughing when you pulled out the beads. Now, what do you think you did to get them to laugh? And secondly, do you think that was helpful to your presentation or not?
In pulling out the beads, initially I'd intended to pull the whole beads out, but they were too big because I just borrowed the beads from someone. So I didn't know the length. But it was very helpful because it started off with humor. Just kept the attention.
Okay, so you felt it was helpful. No, I'm not actually asking the question to challenge that assumption, but see, if it was going to be a very, very, if you weren't going to use names like Jibba Japa and Radha Japa, then it could have adversely affected it, because if the mood that you wanted to give was very somber and grave, then if everyone started giggling in the beginning, it would have been difficult. But since you were using, there was the element of humor in there to help people remember these improper japas. I agree, it didn't get in the way. But these are the type of things you have to consider when making a presentation, is the tone and mood of the presentation going to be appropriate for the subject matter? Okay, next question, the closure. We didn't actually get up to the closure.
The timing was obviously over.
What evaluation did you have planned?
Asking everyone, because I stated I'll ask for recall from memory. So.
Well, how do you feel about the effectiveness of the whole program, of the whole presentation?
Ask the ring.
Well, if you'd like to ask them. But it's hard to get a...
It was difficult to begin with, seeing it was the first presentation.
Yeah.
Cold feet. Yeah. Secondly, the timing, obviously. I knew it was too long because I was practically demonstrating. I felt the practical demonstrations were necessary because it helps in the learning process.
So people will actually see
something, because they'll hear so many other things.
So those are parts that you felt went well?
Yes.
It was a little bit too long. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any questions for the students as something that you'd like their response on?
Firstly, I'm guilty of all three bad types of japa. So, I don't know if anyone felt about saying anything about the presentation. Improving it.
But I'd like to keep away from that particular question about any criticisms and everything like that, because first of all, I'd like to get through a lot of presentations. But also, everyone should be writing down things that they're learning about making presentations and lecturing from watching, from what's said. I can tell you how that stage experience helps. Okay, good. Narottam, you wanted to go?
You know, I was just saying no because I would think that others would.
Okay. Does anyone want to go? Anyone want to try? Okay. I'm not sure yet. I'm contemplating. Any other men would like to go?
So recently, or actually I should say over the years, I've had the opportunity to travel with Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And in traveling with him, I was always surprised at how he was able to keep up such a vast traveling. In fact, over the last 20 years, he's traveled around the world 70 times. So I was asking him, you know, about all the different aspects of his travel. And one of the aspects he told me was he's able to buy his tickets at about half the normal price. So, who here would be interested in saving about half of their airfare coming to India every year? Of course, everyone. So the main aspect of it that he taught me was purchasing the tickets here in India, because the prices are so much cheaper. Now, we might think, well, how is that? How could I do that? Well, he told me the first time that he did it, he took a small loss by buying a full fare one-way ticket from America to India. And then after that, he started reaping the benefits from originating his tickets here. But just today, I was speaking with the temple president, Aniruddha Prabhu, Melbourne. And he told me he actually purchases his tickets from a travel agent in Calcutta. And they just use the second half of the ticket as the originating ticket from India. In other words, Australia, India, and then India, Australia, but he uses it in reverse. So the first point is that if you purchase your tickets here, generally the prices are much cheaper. There is a travel agent who comes here. His name is Rajiv Mishra or Sanjeev Mishra. They run a travel agency called Aerotrek. But also in Bombay, there's another travel agent who handles things, and in Calcutta also. And I can give everyone the names who's interested. A second aspect of this, just for saving money, is that a few times a year they up the ticket fares. So there's a system called backdating tickets. And when you deal with a regular travel agent, you can have them backdate your ticket, which means, for example, that say the fares and the tickets just went up at the beginning of this month. So I arrived with Tamal Krishna Maharaj here and was on, I think, on the 5th or 6th, was on the 6th. And so he immediately went to the travel agent, had the travel agent backdate the coupons before they up at the beginning of the month, and he saved another something like 10% off the ticket. And then plus he's friends with the travel agent, so the travel agent kicked in his whatever fares he gets. So these are some of the ideas on saving money.
And Rob Thomas is going to be opening his own travel agency. Everyone wants to hear
right here in the Gurukul Room 51.
Okay. This was the same presentation you did last time.
Well, I thought you asked me for that.
I'm surprised you still remember it. Okay,
what was
your explicit instruction or objective?
That everyone would, at the end of the class, be interested or be able to understand or give three reasons how they could save money on their airfare.
Yeah, and of course, time didn't work out that you could actually. One reason is because last year we allowed you 5 minutes to make the presentation. Okay, for your set.
My set was, the main attractive aspect of the set was to describe how Tamal Krishna Maharaj is saving money, and also to ask everyone here who or would like to save a substantial amount of money on their airfare.
Did anyone not find that work
did not find that it caught their attention, raise your hand if it didn't catch their attention. Too complicated.
I'm sorry. I just want to give a little story there.
That fact that Tamal Krishnaraj has traveled around the world 70 times, that was amazing.
Gave him credentials as an expert.
Huh?
He gave him credentials as an expert on the field, so you immediately were drawn in to find out what does he do. That's a lot of them, a lot of money.
Okay, and the closure we didn't get a chance to see, and the evaluation was... Notice how the evaluation, if you get your objective very clear, your explicit instructional objective, the evaluation is quite simple, more or less. You already know what you're going to ask for the evaluation if you have your objective right. If you were going to improve it, how would you improve it?
I would condense the set. I would have just come right out straight away and asked.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to do that because this is Prabhu. The last devotee who just gave his, he just, you know, did a short set like that. So I thought maybe I'd try something different.
Anything else?
Conciseness. No, just like that.
Okay. Any questions for the devotees about how any particular thing?
Certainly, if anyone has any points of that I could improve on. Said, closed.
The addresses,
yes. I can give that to anyone at the end of the class. Actually, I would have written it on the board, but I just thought the time would run out. You're welcome.
Any questions about any of the principles that we talked about in the presentation? In those three presentations? Any questions about them? Yeah.
Yes. Why do people go to the closures?
Closure. Well, we didn't really see any examples of closure because everyone had more than a 2-minute presentation. But a closure is quite simple. Basically, it's a summarization. If you just do that, if you summarize the main points, for instance, we could have listed the three types of improper japa. Once again, after having described them in a little more detail, just go over the names once again, just to put the main points fresh in everyone's mind again. That's the most important part of the closure, to summarize. Any other? Yeah.
I think it's very difficult to put all those elements in just 2 minutes.
In 2 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all those who think it's difficult to put all those elements in 2 minutes, raise your hand. All those who don't think it's difficult, raise your hand. Okay, why don't you think it's difficult?
Well, you just have to, because you only have 2 minutes, you have to consider that's the amount of time you have allotted, so you make a simple, explicit, objective.
Yeah, you have to make something very, very simple. You can't teach the entire contents of an encyclopedia in 2 minutes, nor can you teach the 10 offenses against the Dham, but you can teach one if you do it very simply and you're prepared. The main point is that you have to understand you only have 2 minutes. One time on a radio program, Prabhupada was asked to sum up the entire Krishna conscious philosophy in 2 minutes. And he did it. So it's just a matter of accepting the point that you have 2 minutes. And doing the proper planning. You just have to have a short set, a short summarization, and the actual learning objective has to be one appropriate for 2 minutes. This is something that I found that even last year when we had 5-minute presentations, the same point was brought up, that there's only 5 minutes. But now if you had 5 minutes, you'd be thinking that was a luxury because you only have 2 minutes. But actually, it's just as easy to make a 2-minute presentation as a 5-minute presentation. You just can teach less.
Yeah,
You have to accept this point. You have to surrender to this point, actually. Now, what we're going to do is speak about liveliness. Now, from your reading, without looking at the book, here comes my set. You have to listen carefully. Now, what is the purpose of liveliness? What is the actual purpose of liveliness? Without looking.
To catch the attention of the students.
Yes. Thank you very much. It's to keep the attention of the students. Why? Yes, so that they'll learn. Now, it's obviously very difficult to teach someone something if they don't have their attention fixed on you. And there are going to be certain circumstances and certain incidents where there's nothing you can do to get people to pay attention. And there is other circumstances, which is the majority of circumstances, when you, at least you can get most of the people to pay attention, depending upon your presentation. Keeping the attention of the students is not easy. Or more accurately, it's not easy unless you know how to do it and have, I hate to use the term, but the power to do it. It takes some personal power, and that personal power comes from experience. It comes from knowing some techniques. It comes from self-confidence. And it comes from confidence in the materials that you're going to be speaking about. That is very important, that these materials are very important. That I'm going to teach you something that is very important. And that, if one has a deep realization of that, especially in Krishna consciousness, that gives so much potency to his Krishna conscious presentations. The deeper we have realization of the importance of what we are going to speak on, understanding actually that these words, if we are giving Bhagavatam class for instance, these words, Krishna is present in these words. Krishna is present on every page of the Bhagavatam. So therefore, if I speak properly, just representing the words accurately and with realization, I can affect someone's life very deeply. Therefore, that realization and that mood when giving a Bhagavatam class gives great weight in the consciousness to the speaker, and it naturally rivets the attention of most of the people in the audience. Having that deep internal conviction and realization about the Bhagavatam, that is the most important thing. The techniques we're going to speak about today, which we've all titled Teach a Liveliness, they're less important. They're simply techniques that can be extremely useful. But, to be quite frank, these techniques are more or less straight entertainment in one form or another. But it's entertainment for a purpose. It's entertainment with a use, it's entertainment that is not frivolous, it is entertainment with value, because the purpose of this liveliness is to keep the attention of the students. And of course, the value of the techniques are tested by the importance of the message. An expert speaker can use these techniques and keep everyone's attention. And all expert teachers will use them, and you can still be speaking complete nonsense of no value, and everyone's attention will be caught. So we do not value the techniques in and of themselves at all. But again, Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yukta Vairagya Uchate. They are there. People need to have their attention fixed, so we use them. It is simply that. One other simple but important point is that some different people have different personalities. And according to their personalities, they will have an easy time or a hard time with some of these techniques. And not only personalities, for instance, one of the elements is the voice. So some people's voice tend towards monotone. Or some people easily move around in class, in front. So some people have an easier time with the techniques than others. But regardless of how easy or how difficult, or how much we tend in this direction towards liveliness, if we put a little energy into increasing our liveliness by using these techniques, even mechanically, they will help greatly. They will help greatly. I just used repetition and a pause after. The most important, I don't know if I could really say that, but one of the simplest is the voice. The voice is so powerful. But one of the keys, or the most important key in the voice, is speaking loud enough so everyone can hear you. Because if someone's speaking like this all the time, and if he's speaking like this for 5 minutes, or 10 minutes, or 15 minutes, of course no one really speaks like this in a Bhagavatam class or anything. But you have to work so hard to pay attention to what I'm saying now. For a short time it can actually be very effective, because it'll force you to pay attention. But over a long period of time, your mind will definitely wander over a long period of time. So the first principle of public speaking is that one should speak loudly and clearly, and a little bit slowly. That's the general tendency of the voice, especially when people in the audience are not, you're speaking one language and that is not their mother tongue, then you have to speak a little bit slower, because it takes a little while for their brain to translate things. So you always have to speak a little slower when you're speaking to people who in this case English is not their mother tongue. But speak loudly and clearly. Now, as I intimated before, that not only loudness is good, but if someone's, for instance, if someone is speaking loud all the time, after a while, everyone will get a bit of a headache. And it loses its effectiveness if there's just loud speaking. But this variation, sometimes loud and then sometimes a little softer, not as soft as I was speaking before, that's hard for everyone to hear. But it's more soothing. And after a while of speaking softly, and people get the point that you want them to understand, then just a slight raising of the voice to emphasize a point is very effective. So the loudness and the softness of the voice. Notice that when I stopped talking, I went to the board and I just wrote and I didn't say anything. This will come up later. It's called switching sensory channels. From hearing, primarily you were hearing, and then everyone was looking. And just that little bit of restfulness, not just hearing, everyone probably was reading as I was doing that. Switching sensory channels is very effective as well. We'll talk a little more about that in a moment. The loudness or softness of voice.
other things one can do with one's voice. And different people have different abilities in this way. If you speak naturally, though, if you speak loudly, it tends to make one's voice a little higher or lower, like that. They have different effects on people's consciousness. But also the speed that one speaks in. I don't think I'm going to be able to say something very fast at this point. But when you have a very important point to make, sometimes you'll become very excited and you'll speak very fast, and that the emotion of your speaking fast and the speed of your speaking will capture everyone's attention, or they'll actually perceive the intensity of your message by the fact, just simply by the fact that you're speaking fast. And then when you start to speak slowly again, it carries a different weight in their consciousness. And this variety of sometimes speaking a little loudly, sometimes speaking softly, sometimes speaking very slowly and carefully, as if we were speaking to little children who are very delicate. And then other times with great emotion and intensity speaking quickly. This type of variety, just in and of itself, is more or less enough to keep everyone's attention. If you don't do anything else, and if you want to add one thing to the different modulations of the voice, see, now I'm making a point stronger, and I'm not thinking about it, but just naturally, because I taught it, etc. And this particular voice comes easy for me. Other things don't come so easily. But naturally, when you start to make a point, where was I? Do anyone remember?
One other thing.
And one other thing. Oh yes, if you were going to add one thing and one thing only to the voice, the loudness and softness of the voice and the speed, slow or fast, if you were going to add one thing, and practically you don't need anything else, if you have these two things, the voice and the second one is eye contact. Whenever you make a strong point, you pause after, just like I did. Very effective. That silence carries so much weight. Usually teachers are afraid of silence and pauses. It's almost like a nervousness that, you know, just like in the old BTGs, if you look at the very old BTGs, we used to think that it was Maya for there to be any blankness on the page. Remember that in those days? So everywhere, it was nice in its way. You know, everywhere, whenever there was a few inches, you'd put in Hare Krishna, or some little picture of Krishna like that. But actually, as... Huh? What? But actually, the publishers, those who know the art of layout, know that there's need for empty spaces to allow the mind to absorb what's there. And it's the same thing in speaking. And the general rule is, after you make a point, a strong point, something that you want everyone to remember, what do? You pause. 1, 2, 3. Count to 3, if you have to. Don't count to 20, or else by the time you look up, they'll all be gone. 3 is plenty. It'll be almost like torture, counting to 3. But it's a handy way to know how long. But of course, don't just count to 3. Count 1 Hare Krishna, 2 Hare Krishna, 3 Hare Krishna in your mind. And that way you won't forget Krishna. So pausing is very important. But we weren't talking about pausing. We were talking about the second most important point, which was eye contact. Eye contact does 2 things. It, by looking at people just for a second in the eye, that element of personal contact like that, just that simple element of personal contact of one soul looking
at another soul and just touching them for a moment in the eyes. It's so effective, and it keeps people attention and looking at you. And of course, if they're looking at you and their attention is being kept, then naturally they're listening to what you say. You don't have to wait, pause as long as I did when I went around that time. But just for a moment, and a good teacher will always... What was the example I used last time? Does anyone remember?
A lighthouse,
right. Who remembered? Thank you. A lighthouse with its light that beams across the ocean, back and forth, back and forth. A teacher will naturally do that for the two reasons. The first reason, what's the first reason? Keeps attention with a little bit of personal contact. And the second reason is that you can get it.
See if everyone's sleeping.
Yes. You can see how, but not only see if people are sleeping, you can judge how their attention is. Because you're evaluating how you're doing, how your teaching is going, how much attention the students are giving you. So if they're not giving you attention, you have to do something quickly. Because if they're lost for 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, it's very hard to get them back. So when you see that attention is waning, what do? You raise your voice, you stand up, you write something up on the board, wake up, or something. You write something on the board, because these little switching of sensory channels, because sometimes you're speaking and you're very much into speaking like that, but you've already been speaking so long, people's minds are tired, and people's minds become tired. So just by looking around the room, the evaluation is going on to see how the attention of the students is doing. Sometimes if you look around, the students may not be sleeping, they may be like, what's going on here? You know, they just don't, you're explaining an intricate philosophical point, and just by looking at people, you can see if they're understanding or not. And then that may give you the key to just simply stop for a second and say, does anyone have any questions? Just by looking around, you can see, get an idea of how you're doing. So eye contact and voice. And the voice, fast, slow, loud and soft. Very simple. Silence and pauses. Very important. Now, even if you don't have great ability and great range of voice and things like that, just by practicing a little bit and knowing how important these techniques are, or pause, everyone has the ability to stop talking. Anyway, I won't criticize my wife. Don't tell her I said that. Almost everyone has the ability to stop talking. I'm going to really get it now. So even just a simple pause, very, very easy to put in there. And it has so much effect. Now, there's another three or four that are also effective. One is this one we mentioned, this sensory channels. I'm just feeling naturally as a teacher that I should change sensory channels anyway now. Because first of all, I've made it a joke and I have to change the atmosphere back from light to a little serious. So if I write on the board now, I'm thinking that everyone will just read it and then the atmosphere will come down a little bit. So switching, now everyone knows how to read it, but I'll still say it out loud anyway, just to start everyone. Switching. Say how it effective it is, just naturally you'll look and read it along with me. Even though you know I'm playing and I'm telling you what all my tricks are, but still, you know, they're powerful, so they work. Now, two ends or one end?
Two.
Okay, I got it right. Now, one thing when you're writing on the board, you should write heavy, especially these boards tend to have a lot of glare to them. And also, it's good to write big. If you're writing something very simple, it's good to write big. It captures people's attention more. It's good to have a much better handwriting than I do. But these things all help. And then you can just sit back and look at it with everyone else for a second, switching sensory channels. Now I've been doing almost all the talking now, so I'll go to the audience again and pull the students in a little bit. Now, what does switching sensory channels mean to you? You've read this. Exactly. Yeah.
I have a question about that.
Okay, let me just put in about 1 minute's worth of explanation to further what Maharaj said, and then your question. Now, I've already given you the basic idea that most of our teaching is done through speaking and hearing. The teaching is done through speaking, and the learning is done through hearing. So after a while, the mind will become tired of just hearing. And also, the mind will become tired of just focusing its attention on the teacher. So, what we do is change the focus. That's why I did this. So, I'm writing on the board here, and now the focus is on the teacher, but I'm starting to focus it on the board. So, if I move away from the board, for instance, and look at the board, the tendency would be to look at the board, not the teacher. And then, if I come back into prominence to make my point, that will have given you just a few moments of not paying attention to the teacher that can give me stronger prominence when I start again being prominent. And as I put it, a very interesting example in there that I saw Prabhupada do this so expertly in Kobe, Japan. I'll tell the story tomorrow, because tomorrow we'll deal with storytelling. But Prabhupada gave a lecture one night, and the next morning he wanted to tell something to the Indian community of Kobe. So he made a recording of what he wanted to tell them late at night or early in the morning. And then the next day he sat on a couch, and he sat like this, very, so heavy. And he did something that I've never seen anyone in the world able to do. He made his mouth like this. It was just so deep and grave. And he sat like this, and they were all sitting there on the floor, and he just sat there, and he played the tape for them of him speaking. Now, he could have said the same thing himself, because after all, he did say the same thing. He said it the night before. But he sat there, and naturally, I don't think he was thinking of techniques, but naturally, he knew how to deeply affect someone's mind. So he played this tape, which explained how we were not Hindus. And he sat there, so heavy and grave. And then when the tape was over, he asked them for the apartment house we were staying in. He preached to them and he asked them, so that is donation for a temple. Not for himself, but for a temple. But that switching of sensory channels, he focused
on just the tape recorder and the sound coming, and then the person after that. It was so powerful and so effective. Teachers will do this all the time. We can do it over here by seeing this picture of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda in the Sankirtan. Where is the Sankirtan party?
Navadvipa.
Yes. Siya Dvaita Girarda Srinivas Gaura Bhaktivinoda. So often when we're teaching charts, pictures, flip charts, graphs, these things are so effective because it switches the sensory channel. And people look at them, they get their mind absorbed, they learn what you want to learn from them. The teacher may not be right over there pointing, he may be somewhere else, but he somehow fixes their attention on that. And then when he comes back into prominence, their minds are fresh to focus on him again. Very powerful. Another simple technique that we demonstrated just then practically was teacher movement. In this classroom, it's difficult to do because it's very crowded. But one of the things they'll always say in the teacher training course is don't be bound just to your desk. When I'm lecturing on Bhagavad Gita, I'll always do that. When I look around and I see that everyone's attention is a little bit down because in Bhagavad Gita it's just lecture, 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 then the natural thing to do is you walk around, and if there's a particular area of the room, so you notice when you walk around, the people who you're walking here, they get naturally, you listen a little more. So you walk around, and then the people up front who are used to you being right in front of them, their attention is naturally on the other part of the room. It's just the variety. They have to undergo some change in the way that they're perceiving things. And just by undergoing that simple change, it helps them, it helps keep their attention. So teacher movement around the classroom is always effective. And wherever you go, then everyone, of course, better pay attention. Now focusing, there was one technique that we called focusing. It just means combining the above. We learn this in the art of discipline when we teach in the Gurukula. We learn that when you want to give a child an instruction, that you want to actually deeply go in him. Right? When you want to give an instruction, that you want the child to deeply, without a doubt, hear. We learn that you call him by his name. Jayhata, excuse me, do you mind? Jayhata, I want you to stop reading now. Okay? Now I used two things at once, three things actually. I used an authoritative voice, right? I called you by your name, and I looked you right in the eye. And when you do things like this, and the fourth one you add to this, is if you put this hand over here, like this, and you look at the child, and no one practically can stand up to this. And even though he's a heavy guy, strong and everything, but it's heavy still, yes? I want you to stop immediately. Stop calling out in class. It's heavy. So what makes it heavy? The eye contact, the hand, this hand in the air, gesturing, the voice, the authoritative voice and calling by name. It's one of those is strong, two of them is very strong, but the combination of all of them, practically speaking, it's so powerful. And we have the teachers practice on each other like this. I want you to stop doing this. And they all, you know, as soon as you give the eye contact and call them by the name and use the voice, by concentrating all the elements, it has great power. So similarly, if we concentrate all the senses on something, or two of the senses, any two of the senses, or three of the senses, it has so much power. So if you want to make a point, you use the board and you point to it and you use the voice and you look everyone in the eye like that. And then by focusing everyone, all of everyone's senses on something, then it goes very deeply into someone's consciousness. They will not forget by focusing all the senses. And the last technique we'll talk about is the technique about gesturing. Some people in some countries, Italy or something, and in India, everyone has their own hand gestures. They're very powerful. For Yadu, he's good. He likes to use hand mudras when he preaches. Yeah, what ones do you use? You don't use this one too much. You use the Vedic ones. Yadu uses... There are certain Vedic ones when you make a point naturally, pointing like that, or if you want to make a sweeping gestures, you can do it without, without being corny and overdoing it. Naturally, some people do it like that. It's all effective to keep it, because there's some movement at least. There's some movement, but you have to be careful. You know, put everyone to sleep. Remember that these are just techniques. This will not help anyone in and of itself, help anyone become Krishna conscious. But they are powerful techniques, if you are speaking Krishna consciousness, to help people concentrate on what you are saying. They are useless in and of themselves. They are not important in and of themselves. They can be demoniac in and of themselves. But in Krishna's service, they can be used. Don't make more of them than they are, because it's easy to just pick up the techniques. But it will not really help your preaching, and it will not help your presentations if you just pick up the techniques on the technique level. We spoke for the first few days about the principles of Krishna consciousness, the heart of the teacher, etc. And what he's trying to do, he values Krishna consciousness. These are the real important principles. But these are the techniques that can be useful. If someone concentrates too much on the techniques, they can hurt his Krishna consciousness even, because he's missing the point. Just like in book distribution, there are techniques to control people. In book distribution, to get people's money in book distribution. And they work. Salesmen use it all over the world, these techniques. And if people just concentrate on the techniques, if the devotees concentrate just on the techniques, they will lose everything. One time a devotee, a book distributor, a friend of mine, asked Prabhupada if he could travel. Notice I'm going to have to change my pace here. I want to slow it down because this story is so sweet. So I'm naturally slowing down my pace because I'm going into story mode. I'm going to start using my hands a little more. Now he asked Prabhupada if he could travel from temple to temple and teach the devotees how to distribute books. So when he approached Prabhupada in Vrindavan, I think with one other devotee, and asked Prabhupada if he could do this, Prabhupada said, yes, you can travel from temple to temple and teach the devotees, but don't teach them how to distribute books. 1, 2, 3. Teach them how to be sincere. And Krishna will teach them how to distribute the books. That needs 10 seconds at least. It's so deep and heavy. This is actually the art of teaching.
you somehow or another, by your good association, you influence them to be sincere, and you can teach them techniques. But don't confuse the technique with the actual essence, the actual element of book distribution, of deity worship, of teaching, of preaching, of washing pots, of doing anything. It's bhakti, Krishna consciousness. So I don't know what you're all thinking now. I've just criticized using all the techniques that I was using to teach you not to use the techniques. I was teaching the techniques to, using the techniques to teach you not to use the techniques. But use them. But don't be fooled. Please don't be fooled into thinking that the technique is the essence or the principle. Use them, why not? They're Krishna's, they're really only meant for devotees. They're only meant for devotees to use, to help people, influence people to become Krishna conscious. So use them, but don't become fooled.
I have a question about more techniques.
More, you want more, okay.
Just in class here, you're using the board, we're giving this visual experience on the board, and you mentioned painting here like that, and then the variation of the voices. Then you went to hand gestures.
And pauses. And movement.
Movement. Anything else we can use?
These are the ones that I found are the simplest and the best. I can't even think of any more.
This is what generally these five.
Five, I don't know how many. Are there five?
Six. Demonstration.
Well, that's a procedure more. These are just presentation techniques. If you have sincerity and you have these simple techniques, I would guess you don't need very much more or anything more really. If you feel you need more, I would advise you to get more sincerity and let Krishna teach you the more. Don't look anywhere else. Be my advice. Madhuri. You have to make pause. Yes, pause. You have to speak New York. I don't speak English. Mataji said that she has been told sometimes when distributing books on Sankirtan, don't pause, keep talking, don't give them a chance to talk. What to speak or think. So, you should ask the person who told you that what his explicit educational instructional objective was. Because these things are only supportive of what you want to accomplish. If you want to quickly get the books out, you know, hey, where are you coming from? Da-na, da-na, da-na. Hey, caught you smiling. How do you do that one, Arjuna? Smiling in a no smiling zone? $20. So then, you know, I assume the trick is you don't want them to talk, you don't want them to think, you want them to laugh, right? You just have to keep them laughing all the time. Just keep them laughing. But that's not the kind of presentations and the principles we're talking about. We're talking about teaching people, the art of teaching. So when you want a point to sink in with someone, if you want to preach on the merit of the book, and you want them to take the book on the merit of the book, and there are so many devotees who actually do that. When I was in Australia this summer, Radhastami was distributing so many Bhagavad Gitas just in a dhoti, preaching about the Bhagavad Gita. So, if you want to make a strong point that what are you going to do with the rest of your life, what's going to happen after you die, you don't know, do you? So if you say to someone, what's going to happen after you die, you don't know, do you? You have to pause for a few seconds, otherwise. It seemed to me, anyway. Was that a question? No. Any other questions or comments?
It's possible to use the Delhi because they walk in Bhavatan glass.
In the... Well, you can't use the movement very much. You can't use pictures very much. You can't... Generally, we don't point to the blackboard. If I give Bhagavatam class, you'll hear someone using the voice a lot. So many devotees use their voice. Everyone uses their voice, I guess, when they're giving Bhagavatam class. Why not? You have the same problem as there, is that people, it's hard to keep their attention. So these, remember, we were explaining these techniques as techniques to keep people's attention so that they could hear the message of Bhagavatam. So, to some degree, one can use them. One can use set, closure. One should know what he wants the hearers to come away with after they've heard his class. Can use some attention-keeping techniques. But one, again, should not think that technique is the essence. It is just a technique. He took the course 2 semesters ago.
I think a lot of devotees learn the techniques for the surviving and
pushing. Yeah. Because for them, the technique is everything. There is no principle in their lives. Nisyastya bhaktiya bhagavad kinchana. Manurateen asato davato vahi. Because they are traveling on the charity of the mind all over the universe. Remember that story without my silly comments in the middle of it. The Prabhupada said to teach them sincerity. So this is what has to be learned, sincerity. Other things too, but without sincerity, it's all lost. Yikes. Done it again. Now tomorrow, we're going to... I would like everyone to read 48 through 59. It's quite a few pages, but it's pretty easy reading. Most of it is pretty easy reading. Stories are so important. Examples, analogies, always useful, but most important, stories. Prabhupada used to use that all the time. Srila Vyasadeva used it in the Bhagavatam and the Mahabharata. So useful to make a point. It's called indirect teaching. So useful. So, who has actually prepared that 2-minute presentation already? Prepared to make one today? I had asked everyone to do it. Raise your hands high if you've actually prepared that.
What about the book?
Yeah. Well, what I really wanted to do, I expected to give those techniques very quickly, but I didn't. I didn't succeed. And then I was going to break it into our groups, and then in the groups we'd give the presentations to each other. I think that's actually quite suitable. Otherwise, it takes, practically speaking, there's too many in the class to give it to the whole class. And also in a smaller group, it's easier to practice these techniques because in the beginning it's embarrassing a little bit, you know, to play with your voice and pause because it's hard. So in a smaller group, we won't feel as shy to try new things out. So what I think what I would like to do now, there's no time, but we'll start tomorrow with small groups. Everyone must, please, have the 2-minute presentations ready if you haven't given it. And those who've already given 2-minute presentations, they can start getting stories ready. The stories can be longer than 2 minutes, but you'll find it's just as hard to tell a story in 5 to 8 minutes as it is to make a presentation in 2 minutes. As I always find, it's so hard to end the class on time. So we'll do most of the work in small groups tomorrow. Hopefully we'll complete all the 2-minute presentations and everyone can get response on their presentation. They can try things out, give lectures. There's not going to be very many boards. There's only 2 blackboards available. Maybe we can bring up a 3rd one if you... very useful when making points, as we hope you got the point, to use blackboard. So everyone, please be ready to make 2-minute presentations tomorrow, and we'll start the storytelling as well. Okay, there's 5 more minutes in the class, please. Write about teaching, write about this class, write about what you learned about teaching, from the good and bad examples you saw. Do that now. Write as fast as you can. Don't stop writing. I'll tell you when 5 minutes are up, and I'll tell you when 4 minutes are up also.